David, welcome to Jute's List. Welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
Thanks for having me. I'm good. You know, I'm feeling good. Yeah, it's good.
So for our listeners, introduce yourself and tell us who you are.
My name is David Alibo. I'm half Ghanaian, half Moroccan, but I'm based in Accra. And I am a visual artist that whose work is sort of intersecting between Afrofuturism, Surrealism, and minimalism too. And basically my work, if you don't know about Afrofuturism, it's about like sort of putting Black people in alternative spaces or alternate spaces to empower and also allow for meditation and healing and an escape, you know. So that's kind of the goal of my art. And I also, and so basically the medium of my art is between, let's say, virtual reality, 3D, anything digital, anything computer related, tech related, I can turn it into art basically. So that's what I do. I've been lucky enough to work with some pretty big brands and pretty big companies to sort of give my vision to them. You know, I worked with HBO and the Mill Studio for something for Lovecraft Country, which was like an Afrofuturistic show that was released last year. So just to give you an example of what my kind of work is. So we created a kind of a social virtual reality experience where we got like 100 people together to experience one of my artworks, but you're sort of like fully immersed in the world I created, you know?
Yeah.
So we're using virtual. So that's kind of the stuff I do, kind of cutting edge digital art. So that's a little bit about me.
How did you even get into this space? And for our audience, obviously, let's really define your surrealist art that you do and then basically how you choose your style, how you come up with your concepts, right?
I've always been like creative. I always like art. I always like drawing, but I never really took it like as a profession, you know? So I really only dived into it seriously, let's say maybe 5 years ago. But then I started working professionally as an artist for like only the last 3 years, I would say. I got into it just kind of as a way to kind of kill my time. But the more I spent doing it, the more I realized that it's something I want to wake up for or something I want to wake up to do, you know, which I think is important, giving me a sense of purpose. So, you know, I mean, as cliche as it sounds, like really like the whole art thing kind of found its way to me, you know, and then I just dived headfirst into it and spent all my time learning about it, learning how to create the art that I wanted and I liked, you know. So it's as much for me as it is for the audience or people who like my work, you know. It's personal. Yeah.
Okay. So what were you doing before art?
What was I doing before art? I just graduated from business school in New York, thinking that I wanted to do the whole Wall Street.
Yeah.
Not Wall Street necessarily. I wasn't a finance major. I was an economics major. But I was very interested in international relations and like the way the world works, you know?
Yeah.
So I still am. But I kind of was a bit like my dream or the bubble was burst on me a little bit the more I went into learning about it. And it kind of took me on a path where I wasn't really happy with. So I go complete my master's or I kind of stop. So my dad asked me what exactly I wanted to do. And I was like, no, I wasn't sure I wanted to do this. So I came back to Ghana. I spent 4 years in New York, but I was always in Ghana in between every summer. But I was like, I'm back in Ghana and I was like kind of permanently based here now. So I was like, what am I going to do? So I had to kind of like reinvent myself. And then I just started like kind of growing and building my portfolio, my audience as well. And yeah, here we are now.
Wow. It's taken you, let's say, the last 5 years to get here, right? Would you say at this point in your life, you sort of like discovered your purpose?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I already knew like 3 years ago that this is what I wanted to do, like, for life. I'm 25, so I decided when I was 21, 22 that this is, like, what I want to spend all my time doing, really.
Yeah. What was the final insight into coming to that point and then having that answer for yourself? When did you realize that this is it?
I guess when I started supporting myself through art. And, like, not just supporting myself, like, a job, but, like, something that fulfills me and something that I want to wake, like I said, I want to wake up to and do and sort of work at. So it's kind of the intersection of all the things that I'm interested in. You know, I mean, beyond art, I am into film, music, and a lot of other interests, you know, but I can find a way to kind of meld all these interests through art, you know, whether it's a video installation or a sound installation. Like, being an artist kind of gives you that freedom to explore all these, like, diverse interests I've had since I was a kid, you know? It's just a nice way to tie it all together.
Yeah. So also for your genre of art, like, I'd say you're very out there, you know? Like, you're not doing what everyone's doing, you know? Like, at once. Now there's a wave in Accra where everyone's, like, going into, like, murals, or, like, they're doing oil on canvas or paint on canvas. You get what I mean? But you are into the future. Who's your audience and how do you relate to them?
Oh, so basically, last year I was in Lagos for ArtX, and they commissioned me to do a project called Future Africa, where I was meant to speculate on the future of Africa. But, you know, I mean, it's hard to ask anyone to speculate on the future of an entire continent.
Definitely.
So, I mean, it was like kind of a tough challenge, but the only way I saw fit to do it justice was to make it personal, or to make it to my
perspective. Yeah.
So, my perspective, because it's insulting to say this is what the future, you know,
so
what I mean?
Look like for everyone. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. And it's, you know, it's completely false. So the only way I could do it was make it personal, make it, like, dreamlike, you know, make it, like you said, my perspective. So going back to your question about my audience and stuff, you know, there was a huge range of audience checking out the installation. You know, it was like a really huge screen with all the video and sound playing. And, like, the traditional art people, as much as they were interested in the art or in the sort of the nature of it, they know their ways. They know the stuff that they came for, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're talking about, like, still paintings or sculptures, you know. So even though they can appreciate it, it's not in their line of business, you know.
But
then as the fair kept going and it was open to the public, it was like all the people like us our age and younger who were like, or around our age range, who were like blown away, you know, like they wouldn't even leave the room, you know. They weren't even interested necessarily as much as in the other ones than in the digital art part of the exhibition or the art fair, you know. So my audience is, like, I guess people like me or people who even older. I'm not just saying it's for young people, older people like it, but it's more like, the point is, different people respond to different types of art. You know, so you should always, that's what I like about what ArtX did, is that they created different types of art for different audience, you know. So my audience will be like the millennials, Gen Z, people who've grown up with tech or grown up with technology, computers, the internet, can relate to the work in a way that maybe other people couldn't, you know.
Yeah.
But it's not fair to say that it's just that, but in general, it tends to be more people like us, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in this installation, can you describe, like, the various themes that you put together for the version of Africa that you saw?
The thesis of the project was that I was speculating on three different futures. So one was kind of a callback to more of our ancestral upbringing and our more traditional ways of life, but reinterpreting it through, obviously, new medium and stuff. So it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek on, like, what people considered what Africa was, like some, you know, jungle where you're being chased by like lions and animals, you know, which is so I kind of took that like flawed view of it and then sort of subverted it through sort of like software and the digital tech to kind of to give it a new life and obviously take control of that sort of failed thinking, you know. And then there was one speculation, which is like the world we're living in now, where technology rules everything.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard to like describe the when you see it, you know. But to give you an idea, basically, so I told you we had a huge video and sound in Lagos, but obviously not everyone can go to Lagos. So for the digital, for the online side, I kind of took the art and extended it into the digital realm by, so basically the audience could use their phone as like they were in the world. So it's like a virtual reality, but you don't need the headset. So we're utilizing like the phone's ability to like the rotation and gyroscope functions.
Yeah.
So like you view the whole world through your phone. And the message is that like we're looking at everything through our screens. You know, life is through screens and technology. So it was kind of like the message was that like this is a future where like we have to decide whether technology is controlling us or we are controlling it. Like, is it empowering us or is it limiting us? You know, so that's the question that I asked to the audience, kind of not directly. You know, I don't like to spoon feed a message, to first of all allow someone to get their own message regardless of what I'm telling. And then maybe if you look deeper into it, then you can see what I'm trying to say, you know. So because people always have different interpretations. I could show you something and give you all this explanation, but you'll come out with it with something else, you know. So I don't like to necessarily
draw conclusions for your audience.
Exactly. So the message was that like it was also dealing with the topic of space exploration and finding new spaces, you know. So basically, when the Earth isn't habitable anymore, where are we going to go to? We're going to go out beyond the Earth, you know. I mean, I'm not talking now, but I'm talking like soon, maybe in like 100 or 1,000 years or whatever.
Okay.
Because of the rate at which the Earth's going. So the question is like, when we go into these new unexplored places, how do we claim them as Africans? Do we preserve our culture or do we start afresh, you know? So these are the questions I was asking. And then for the final speculation, it had to do with a world that was destroyed by climate change, you know. So there's a theme of, there's an environmental theme running through all the work, you know, in terms of our relationship with nature as well as technology. So this was a world that's in flames and it's burning. So I'm asking, so this is kind of like more of a darker speculation where I'm thinking like, if we don't change the way we treat the Earth and our relationship with it, what's that going to look like, you know? And then, so the whole point of the exhibition was that it loops, you know, the whole feed loops. So after this one ends, we go back into that ancestral traditional one, which is kind of telling the message that like we need to go into the future, but take lessons from the past, you know, and take the lessons that have kind of been passed down by our ancestors in terms of how they respected the Earth or how they respected the environment, you know, in a very real way, you know, in even the stories we hear, the oral traditions and stuff, there's always sometimes that underlying respect for the world around you, which sometimes I feel like could be lost now. Yeah. So those were kind of the themes I was playing with for the future Africa. So the title of mine was One Africa, Three Futures. But as I describe it, you might think that when you're watching it, it's very like obvious, but it's all kind of very dreamlike and surreal. So you can get it, but you could also come out with like 100 other different interpretations. But that's just my thinking going into creating this work.
Yeah, yeah. So it seems like you have several diverging themes in those messages, right? We can go into them, but I would really want to say, what's your central philosophy behind where you see Africa going?
I mean, I think it's definitely like we're at like a crossroads where like we could either propel ourselves into like top of the world, you know, in terms of art, music, you know, because we're putting ourselves as Africans in the diaspora.
Yeah.
In all these places now where we can literally change the narrative and change the way things have been working, you know, and pave the way for like the next generations to not struggle and face the same struggles and the same obstacles to growth that we have, you know what I mean? So it's definitely one where I'm extremely optimistic for it, but I also know that if we just sit there and do nothing, then we're just going to end up being like sort of left behind, you know? It's literally up to us as creators, as owners to allow the next generation to take our place and more, if that makes sense. So it's definitely like, I'm one where like, I'm obviously like, you know, where things are going, I'm happy for Black people around the world and especially in Africa, you know, but I am aware of some of like, let's say the challenges and stuff we still have to face, you know, but overall, like Africa is the future. We're the largest youth population, the fastest growing population.
Yeah.
And I think people are the most valuable commodity, you know, not gold, not Bitcoin, not it's people and what people can do. So definitely, if we have the largest growing population of young people, that's like the biggest flex, you know? So it's up to us to make sure that we take ownership and we, you know, we own. I'm big on ownership and owning the things that you create and the things, you know, because for too long it's been either we're renting or we're leasing things, you know, but it's time to own stuff.
Definitely. I feel like also in your line of work, it comes with some form of self-awareness where like you're very aware of your own thought process and your own ideas, your central philosophy. And how did you also come to this point of awareness, I would say? How did you choose your set of values and stick to it?
No, I get you, bro. You know, it's only recently that people are finally giving respect to digital artists like myself, you know? For too long, we've been like kind of outcast and thrown to the side. And like, it's all about like traditional painting or black portraiture, you know, which is good. I love that. But there's so much more we have to offer, you know, even beyond digital art. I'm talking about like other mediums of art, you know? So it's like right now, we're finally getting the respect we, you know, we deserve, I feel. So how did I reach my values? I mean, I've kind of had like a crazy upbringing, you know. My dad was a diplomat, so I was always traveling around with him. Like I lived in Angola, I lived in Russia, I lived in India for 2 years, almost three. So I've like, even though I'm very much rooted and based in Ghana, like I've kind of lived all over the world and had to learn a lot of lessons and, you know, ways to adapt and ways to blend in and ways to stand out. So like, I feel like I've kind of had a long winded road to where I am now, but in that way, it lends a unique perspective to my art because it has that kind of, how do I put it? That conflict between like art that is very universal in terms of everybody can enjoy it, but it's also very much rooted in my African heritage, you know?
Yeah.
Being Moroccan and Ghanaian is also something that you don't usually see. I mean, I'm yet to meet another half Ghanaian, half Moroccan, other than my sister, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like I have a unique perspective and vision to share, which like I've been fortunate enough to have an audience that can like lift me up, you know, because at the end of the day, like, it's the people that, you know, that roll with you that are gonna put you up, you know. As much as you can put yourself up, it's about the people around you and the community. So yeah, I mean, I'm very fortunate to have to be able to share my experiences through the art, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, yeah.
So growing up, what has been like your greatest struggle? You mentioned moving around a lot. Do you feel like that has affected your outlook on life as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, you know, like, I'm not going to lie, like, it can be a bit of a shock when you have to suddenly just, like, pack your things. And, you know, it's kind of like being an army kid or something, where it's like your dad gets sent somewhere and then you kind of have to now say bye to all your friends and go make new ones in some new place, you know. But the good thing is that you're not too comfortable, you know. It keeps you sharp, because it's like you have to be able to make friends, or you have to be able to be, it teaches you a lot of skills, you know. So
yeah,
it's something that you can't look at negatively. Like, yeah, sure, it sucks, but you meet more people, or you meet interesting people, you see interesting things, and you see how people live different from you. I think that's probably the biggest thing, you know. Like, it makes you realize that, like, you're in a bubble, you know.
Yeah,
and
you think that
everybody's living like you, but really, like, it's so different. And
it's bigger than you.
It's way bigger than you, you know. So maybe in a way, that's kind of where that sense of self-awareness kind of was honed, you know, that skill. And I'm still learning it, you know. It's a kind of lifelong journey type thing. But
yeah.
I think that's probably where I get my, you know. And also, like, my work deals a lot with themes of reflection, introspection, looking inside you, like, sort of like looking inward, you know, before you look outward. So those are things that have always been a part of me. I've always been kind of like a quiet thinker, you know, quiet kind of like observer, you know. So that's like a running theme through my work, is like the power of reflection, introspection, and sort of the power of you in a way, like, and how you can sort of dictate your what happens outside, you know, or your perception or your reaction to what happens outside of you.
Yeah. David, I know you're a futurist like myself, right? So in the wake of like Web 3.0, like NFTs, like where digital is going right now, I know these are concepts that you're aware of. Also for this conversation, I was hoping, I don't want us to go into like definitions and details, but like, I also want to hear your thoughts on opportunities, trends, things that you see happening.
What we're living in now with Web 3.0 and NFTs is like the single greatest equalizer that's happened in, like, I don't know, maybe decades or possibly centuries, where like people can actually support themselves now through the digital, through digital media or through the internet, you know. And it's never, you know, it's breaking down so many barriers that were kind of set up in the old you know, institutional racism and all that, things that were meant to keep us down. This is finally a chance for us to take control. So, I mean, it's never been a better time for anybody, especially here with access to internet, to create something or to earn something for themselves, you know. So it's a chance for, that's what I mean by like having this huge young population. If we can like get them onto like building in this Web3 arena, like, think about how much empowerment that could give to the whole continent. You feel me?
Yeah.
So I mean, with the whole NFT thing, I mean, it's literally, for me personally, it's like allowed me to have the freedom to be creative, because it's helping me pay my bills. It's helping me keep a roof over my head. You know what I mean? So in a way, it's extremely liberating to be in this space right now. And it's also cool. It just reminds me of like that time when the internet was coming out, you know. I mean, I was a baby, but it's still that same like, oh my God, what's happening? Like, this is crazy. And people being like, this is a scam, or this is crazy. You know, so as much as we have the people like us who are like very much believing in the power of Web3, we have a lot of people who are like, this is garbage, you know. But once they realize the power of it and how it can literally change lives, then they'll get on.
Yeah.
But then it's going to be too late for them because we've already built the ways to the structures in Web3, you know?
Yeah. I want to give a great analogy to explain some of the stuff we're talking about here. So Web 2.0 will be like J.K. Rowling coming up with Harry Potter, right? And she would write the entire book. She would be the bestseller. She would own the rights for everything. But we're in a new age where you're going to create any form of IP, intellectual property. You can put it online and share it with the world, and people can collaborate and own it together with you. Right?
Yes. So it's
creating Harry Potter, but now you can ask people to change how it ends, input new characters, right? Make the story grow bigger than it originally was. So that's the future we're heading into right now, right? And for ownership, now ownership is going digital. That's what we're also saying, right? So it's best you look into these things than stand on the sidelines and say, oh, the future is not happening. That's not going to happen. I don't know what this is about. And choose to remain ignorant, you know? So, I guess that's the whole point.
That's the whole point. And I mean, like, when you're saying, like, you said we shouldn't get into the definitions of NFT and stuff, you know, because it gets a bit technical. But, I mean, the whole point of it, at least from my perspective, is that, you know, as an artist, like, I share so much of my work for free, you know. I don't really ask for anything for it, you know. I give it out because it's a platform, or it's the world. I want the world to see the work, you know, not for any, like, obviously you can sell your work and stuff, but I'm talking about how you start or what your motivations are when you start, you know. But as you actually build a career out of this, at the end of the day, this is the career you've chosen, you know. But these platforms don't really, let's say, like Instagram or Twitter or maybe even TikTok, you know. Yeah. It's only till now that you've been able to monetize your content. Before, it's like you give all your work and people share it and retweet or post it. But that doesn't equate to anything in your account or in your wallet. You
know? It just equates to likes.
It equates to zeros and numbers, and it just puts all the money into the hands of the platforms, you know, the people that are allowing your work, you know. It's you are the user, you know, you are the money back for them. So for a long time, it's been hard to make a living as a digital artist or somebody that's putting their work on the internet, you know. So now it's finally a way that even if you share the work, even if millions of people share the work, you can actually prove who the real owner is, you know, for the first time in a publicly available way.
Definitely.
That anybody with an internet connection can show you that who's the owner of it, you know. So in a way, like, it's finally given value to your work being shared, because before it's like nobody could, you could be like, how can you sell a picture that a million people have, you know? How are you going to prove that this is the original, you know? So in a way, we finally allowed ownership, and we've allowed proof of ownership and provenance, you know, which I think is the biggest part of the art side of things, you know.
Yeah,
so that's the power of NFTs in that context. But there's so many other ways that it's helpful. But specifically for that, you know, I think that's a way for people to understand what an NFT is that it's not so much about what it is. It's about proving who owns what, or having a publicly accessible ledger that shows you who owns what, you know.
Yeah.
And through knowing who owns what, you can actually sell something, you feel me? Because the collector or whoever is going to resell it, who also has financial incentives, maybe might would pay whatever you ask, because they know that the value of it is real. You feel me? So I think that's a good way to explain NFTs to people who might not be necessarily into that whole thing.
And then to close up on this point, what do you wish people would look into or people would know? Because we're speaking to an audience this is just like starting up. We're just in the frenzy where, like, that's why I said I didn't want to go into technology, because we're very on the edge of this thing happening, right? So What's your top two takeaways for people to look into?
Do some research, you know, or just like read about it, you know. It's everywhere now. I mean, this whole Web3 movement. So it's not hard to find information about it and just educate yourself on the various movements that are happening, you know. Because I know with you, you come from like sort of a writing background.
Yeah.
You're finding your own niches and your own ways to enter into the space, you know.
Definitely.
Which is what I'm trying to tell your audience, that it could be a good way to like just find a way that you can be in the space, you know, whether it's like through like a podcast or through even YouTube. YouTube's a really good platform to learn about all these movements and stuff. And then I guess I'm not really big on giving advice, because like I'm also learning, you feel me? I'm not some expert in the space by any stretch of the imagination. But for me, it's like I'm always reading and learning about what's happening. And then the more I read, the more educated I am about it, the more I can find places that maybe intersect with my interests, you know? So, and then I look for other people that are doing it, you know, and ask them questions, ask them like where they messed up or the mistake they learned, and then just ask them their opinion, you know. So ask around if you have people. You don't even have to be literally physically around you. You can even go on internet. Everybody has a friend who's into this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Everybody has that one friend that. So ask them, like,
yeah. I'm sure
everyone has that one friend, bro. So ask them and just see what they say, you know, like, and because unless maybe like you have that human connection or someone explaining it to you as a person, it can all seem like a bit much. You know what I mean? So that's like some small advice that I can give. It's not really advice. It's more about like,
yeah,
just do your own research, really.
Yeah, that helps. That helps.
Yeah, that helps. Yeah.
What do you wish you had known before you started 5 years ago, David?
Make sure you read the entire contract. You know, when you're dealing with like the legal side of, not that I've been involved in any legal trouble, but it's when I'm as a creative or as a entrepreneur or anybody living now, it's like you juggle so many different roles. You feel me? Whether it's like your accountant, your lawyer, your own cheerleader, your own manager, you know, you wear so many hats, and you have to in this age we're living in to be successful. So I would say is like, don't gloss over things, you know, make sure you read the fine print. And if you can't, find somebody who's knowledgeable about that stuff, you know, because like I said, it's all about empowering yourself and ownership, you know. So you have to make sure that things are set up for you to own all of your content, you know. That's something I would have done differently, is maybe work more to own my stuff earlier, you know.
Yeah, but why do you say this?
Why do I say this? Because people can and will exploit you.
Do you have a personal experience with this?
You don't set up the means to protect yourself, you know. No, I'm not gonna go into any personal stories like that, but there have been sometimes situations where people have come into an agreement with me with the intention of exploiting me. So I mean exploiting in terms of like maybe not giving you your fair share or not telling you exactly how the revenue is being, you know, stuff like the technical stuff, the boring stuff that nobody wants to go to. Those are the ones that you should be paying very much attention to. That's kind of what I'm saying. I don't have any like vendettas or any sort of vengeful stories, but because I come from that kind of business background, I also know how to negotiate. I know how to be to hold my place in those kind of settings, you know. So I'm just saying that like there have been situations where I saw that was happening and I took myself out of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
To avoid like any sort of
Being taken advantage of.
Yeah, and also your time, because your time is the most precious thing you have. So don't let other people waste it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In closing, like, what has been the highlight of your year so far for 2021?
Oof. I mean, obviously showing, to be commissioned by art, not to only to show, you know, it's always been a dream of mine to showcase my work at ArtX. You know, if you don't know about ArtX, it's basically the biggest.
Yeah, I've been following, so yeah.
So it was a huge dream come true for me to exhibit there, but not only to be exhibited, to actually be commissioned, and like they asked me to come and show my work. So it's kind of like mind-blowing, like, you know, even look, you know, like what could happen, you know. But I was like, why can't I be at ArtX for the longest time? And then suddenly, you know, even though I was obviously staying consistent with my craft and working, I got the opportunity to be called there, you know what I mean, which is like amazing for me. And that's definitely the highlight so far. But
yeah. Did you also do something for Adobe?
Yeah, so I mean, I did a design kind of master class. So on two occasions, you know, even there's some funny stories about some of the hurdles I had to jump to make it happen, you know, because my MTN decided to fail me on the day I had my live stream, you know.
Wow.
So literally with like 20 minutes to go to going live to like millions of people, my internet goes off. So I was like, what is, and then I get a text from them like, we're having issues and we're working on it. Can you believe it? So like by the time I was able to gather my stuff and get I missed the first show. That was my first show with Adobe. Can you imagine? Wow. So I was like crushed, you know, I was like so disappointed, but then I gathered myself and I was like, listen, I'm not going to let this like stop me. So then the next day, I was supposed to do 2 days. So the next day I came back, and obviously people were like, where were you yesterday? And I was like, you know what, let's just focus on this and get through it. And then they actually called me back for another class after this happened, like a couple of weeks or months down the line. And obviously this time it went smoothly. I had a Vodafone one in case things
went. You had a backup.
I had a backup, you know, but I could have let that stuff, I could have let that first hurdle like stop me, you know, but I powered through, and I made that second day like so, like I came in with so much energy and then they were able to call me back for another masterclass where we talked about like design, and I created a piece, you know, a collage piece, because when I started my art career, I started it doing collage work, which is like stitching together pictures I took, but like with also like other public royalty, public domain pics, and kind of recreating this world, you know, because I also didn't have much experience with the art thing, but I knew that I had to do something. So it was kind of like a full circle moment where I went back to doing the thing that I started at first. That was what I was doing with Adobe. We designed like a surreal collage in Photoshop. And then I came back the next time to animate it as well and kind of tell my story at the same time, you know, because at the end of the day, nobody really wants to hear you do a whole tutorial on how, you know, this click this. They want to hear your story. They want to connect with you on that personal level, which is why I accepted to do this podcast with you, is because it's like you have your audience here and you have people that maybe I could connect with on that level, you know, and
definitely.
And you connect with by bringing guests and have that conversation, you know what I mean? So that was really dope with Adobe. I'm super thankful for that. And also working with other people that I'm not legally allowed to say. I'm not legally allowed to say I worked with, but my work, it's pretty distinctive. I feel like you can tell. So that's a bonus for me. That's, I don't always have to have my name on it for you to know it's mine, you know? So yeah, I've been really blessed, and the future is looking bright, and I got some big plans for 2022. Wow, I cannot believe I'm saying 2022. Crazy. So yeah, I'll just leave it to your imagination, and you're gonna see some cool stuff coming up in Accra and around the world, you know?
Okay. David, in your own words, what would you say love is?
Love is human connection, or, you know, sharing memories, experiences, advice, stories with other people, you know? We're living in a world that's becoming increasingly disconnected the more connected we are. So, like, genuine connection, reaching out to somebody and exchanging something, you know, not even just money or anything material, but exchanging, like, the immaterial things, the non-material things. I think that's my definition of love.
Awesome. Finally, where can our listeners find you online? Where can they connect with your work as well?
Cool. You can look me up on most social medias as David Alabo, David and A-L-A-B-O. And then also, you can look up my work on my website. You can also check out the digital interactive experience I made for ArtX and get an idea of sort of the world that I'm building, you know. So it's just Google ArtX
Lagos. Okay.
Check their website out. You'll see it there.
Awesome.
Or on my socials, I have most of my stuff on there. So yeah, say send a message, say hi. I'm mostly available. I'm terrible with my phone and stuff, but as you may know, Drew. But I do try to when I can.
Yeah. Awesome. Yes. So this has been a great session. Thank you so much for your time, David.
Thank you, bro. I had a real pleasure being here.